Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking. A mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm Philip Wiley, your host. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I love helping people get started in penetration testing and offensive security. Each episode, I have a guest that hopefully their stories will inspire you and motivate you to get started your career in offensive security. And today, I'm happy to have Savannah Lazara with me. And she's a pretty cool, interesting person and works with the Red Team Village, and I think you're really going to enjoy her story. So let me introduce my guest. Hello, Savannah. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sure that some people will get some good out of what you have to say today. So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, no problem. Hi, everyone. My name is Savannah Lazara, as Philip had said. I am a senior consultant on the attack and pen team at Optiv. I'm also the co-lead of the Red Team Village. I'm also the alumni advisor for Verdict UT at the University of Tampa. And I also am a Hack the Box ambassador for the city of Tampa. I have my expertise is in social engineering, and I've worked with many companies doing security assessments, and I've been in the industry for a few years now, and I absolutely love it. And I'm excited to be able to talk about my background and everything on the show today with Philip.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about your story. So you really seem to have really taken off. I mean, I guess I came familiar with you last year through some of the events through the Red Team Village and some other events hosted by Omar and Joseph. So I've been really impressed with what you've done. So I guess I really wasn't aware that you specialized in social engineering. Could you tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of what all you do in your job as a penetration tester?
So mainly I do a lot of network assessments and then also the social engineering side, which I enjoy a lot. So when I refer to the social engineering side, this is like on-site pretexting. So me pretending to be somebody else on site to try to gain access, just try to get into a building, or doing like a physical pen test where you're kind of putting in the physical aspect with the social engineering aspect and combining those together. So badge cloning, lock picking, climbing through the roofs, stuff like that. Any way to be able to get in physically. And then once you're kind of inside, then you have to play that social engineering aspect of it. So that's, I would say, like kind of like social engineering side. And then with the network assessments, that's more so relating to like internal engagements or stuff on the perimeter. So anything that's internet facing for a client that we will be evaluating. So those are the main things that I would say I do at Optiv, and those are the things I enjoy the most. Yeah.
Very cool. That's one of the things that's interesting about the social engineering side being part of pen testing and also the physical assessments. That's the stuff I think people really think of or are interested in becoming a pen tester, because it's more the spy kind of stuff than just the typical boring, just network pen test only, you know, narrow scope pen test. So I think that's really the kind of stuff that really inspires people and draws them in, I believe.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy it. I kind of got like thrown on one, I'm going to say a year and a half, 2 years ago. And it was basically like a physical pen test, and just people don't expect like anyone to be coming in their building. Like that's not wearing like, say, like a hoodie with like the hood up. Like that's what they expect of someone who's trying to break into the building, but that's not like, that's not how it is anymore. I mean, I don't know if it was like that back in the day, probably not, but If you play the specific stereotype of the company you're kind of trying to get into, then you'll probably be able to get in because people just don't expect normal looking like people that are not wearing like hoodies and just stuff like that are not trying to get in.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about the misconception about, you know, and kind of one of the things I like the mission about Hacking Is Not a Crime, trying to show people that it's not just cyber criminals, there's professionals that use this skill set. But it's interesting how the misconceptions help us as professionals if you're trying to do social engineering when they're expecting someone that's cyberpunk looking or wearing a hoodie or something. And sometimes it's just, you know, some of these people doing this is like, so, like a good friend of mine that I used to work with. He's a grandfather, so no one's expecting a grandfather to social engineer, you know, or do a physical assessment and sneak into a building and stuff. So those stereotypes sometimes kind of help professionals.
Yeah, no, my favorite is to play like an executive's daughter. So that's usually like the scenario I'll play. And then like, once you say, if somebody really likes like that certain executive, like, oh, like that's so-and-so's daughter, like do whatever you want. Like stuff like that. Like it's immediate, like them relating their friendship with whoever that is. And if they know it's like someone that's like family, then they want to also treat them like how they would treat that other person. That's just how people are. Like, they want to be nice and let everybody in, but just how we are in the world today, you can't, you need to like follow security protocol with stuff like that.
Yeah. And they don't want to make the C-level executive mad because they disrespected or upset their daughter. So that's a really, really good pretext.
Yeah. And then the phishing too, that's obviously gotten harder over the past few years. Like I would say it's ramped up extremely hard. Since like whenever I started, it wasn't that hard to kind of get past like email filtering and everything, but it's a lot of companies are catching on to what attackers are using, like in the emails or however they're hosting them. So that I would say phishing is getting harder with the social engineering aspect as well. So that will keep on evolving, like probably every like 3 months, I feel like.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So in your job, do you do any kind of adversary emulation or red teaming?
So right now I am actually shadowing to join our breach team. So I've gotten to shadow remote breaches that we're doing and also help with it. So with my expertise in the social engineering, with the phishing, that's usually what I would be helping with, kind of bypassing, say, like Microsoft ATP. There's just specific things that you can do to kind of say, for example, there's certain IPs that will scan an email. So if you find out whatever email provider is scanning those, like the email filter, then you can block those through Cloudflare if you, like, you host all the DNS records in there. And you can actually block specific IPs from even accessing your phishing site and kind of go about it that way. And then also block people from actually scanning the email to see if there's that site that you're linking, because that's what it's going to do. It's going to go to that site. So that's how I help a lot with any of the breaches that we're doing on our team. And then there's other people who are, say, like really good with evasiveness. So then that would be like their role, like once we're in. And obviously, like, we all have expertise in that, but usually someone who with the most experience would kind of like take the lead on that.
Cool. So some of our audience listeners may not be real familiar of the different types of things in offensive cybersecurity. Could you explain the difference between like your red teaming adversary simulation compared to just a traditional pen test or network assessment?
So usually with like a traditional pen test, one, a lot of people know it's happening and they're kind of aware that someone's in their environment and like it could be somewhat noisy, but it shouldn't be crazy noisy. When I mean like noisy, I mean like kind of doing a lot of stuff at once. Like it shouldn't be setting off a bunch of alarms, but it should kind of be kind of like normal. And you would know the specific IPs that you're kind of going after with the scope that a client like authorizes you to do. And then obviously you can communicate with the client throughout an actual test like that. And so then if you do more so like a red team engagement or a breach, that's whenever there's probably only one or two people that know and they cannot tell like anybody else that this is happening because it would jeopardize basically the entire engagement. And the goal with the breach with breaches in general is to be as evasive as possible, where it's not setting off any flags. It's not even blending in. It's like, you're not even getting noticed of whatever you're doing. So being extremely quiet, not doing a lot, not raising any flags with anybody at the firm.
Okay. So do you think it's kind of good for someone? Do you find value in someone starting out as a pen tester and moving into that type of role?
I think if somebody has, you have to have the patience, because also, I guess I can also add in what we were just talking about. They're usually about like 2 months long, maybe 3 months long, versus a traditional pen test would be like a week or two, depending on how large the scope is. But if somebody wanted to transition, say, into a pen test role, and they really like the aspect of a longer type of gig and not having a lot of people knowing what's going on and being extremely quiet and evasive, it's definitely possible to get to that point. But there's a lot of studying associated with that, because you need to learn what's going to set off certain things just by like just simple commands, like, or simple scans can set off alarms with really good companies that have like a really good security posture. So you just have to have a good understanding of, if I do this, what's going to happen? Like, what's the outcome? Like, what's the blue team going to see, basically? So yeah, I would say it's definitely possible if somebody wants to learn that aspect of it, of being more evasive and wanting to go down that route, which I would definitely recommend, because having an understanding of how to be more evasive in an environment only benefits you more.
Oh, good. Thanks for the explanation. I know a lot of times there's so much confusion between just everything. Everybody thinks this red team is the same thing, which, you know, true red teaming is not. So thanks for that. One of the things, we kind of got your story so interesting, we got into all this other cool stuff. So how did you get started?
So I used to be in marketing, and I was a marketing administrator, and I really liked the aspect of doing cybersecurity, but I was honestly like really scared to go into it. But then I kind of like made the leap and took a class at the University of Tampa that's based on Network Plus. And so from there, I ended up like switching my major to cybersecurity. And then at the University of Tampa, they incorporate business classes. So one of our marketing classes, the professor in that course, Professor Beamer, had us narrow down like what job we were interested in the most, like in our field. So we could kind of like target to like get there, basically. So he had us line up like our skills that we have, and then the skills that the job like is requiring, and try to fill in those gaps over like the period of the year or until we graduate, and try to kind of get an internship from there or whatever role we're trying to go into. And that's how I ended up getting my internship at a firm in Tampa, was kind of learning what I needed to learn based off of that job that interested me, which was pen testing at the time. And so pen testing or security consultant is the same kind of terminology. But so I interned at a firm in Tampa, and eventually after a year, I became full-time there. And then after almost a year full-time, or six months to a year, I came to Optiv as a security consultant. And I mean, I honestly spent a lot of time trying to continuously learn. So that's the biggest thing I would say in our industry. You have to be ready to sacrifice like time to constantly want to do stuff. To me, this like, the sacrifices are, they're worth it. Cause I mean, I really love like our industry and everything about it. So it's honestly like a hobby. So it's fun to me to be able to constantly learn new things that are coming out, new attacks and stuff like that. So I'd say like, that's kind of how I got involved with it. It was kind of happened really quickly, but in a good way.
That's good. Yeah. It's interesting that you found that in college. You know, a lot of people I talk to, they find that after they, you know, get out of college and maybe work in some other areas. So that's cool and good that you had the opportunity education wise at a college to be able to find what you wanted to do. That's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say like, I wish every university did something like that, because I mean, I'm sure there's other people in that same class that did that, and they probably were able to kind of go in that role because of him making us do that, like making us adjust our resumes to kind of match whatever we wanted to do, making us set aside the time to kind of build up those skills that we needed to get to where we wanted to go.
Oh, very cool. So I know you do a lot of volunteering and stuff, and you're the co-coordinator of the Red Team Village. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about those efforts?
Yeah, so I actually helped at the Red Team Village 2 years ago. It was the last in-person one, I think 2019. That was when I met Omar. And so I was just a volunteer helping him. And so after helping at the Red Team Village at DEF CON, which we were running like a web app village, I stayed in touch with Omar and Joseph and just continuously kept on helping with events because I enjoyed it. Enjoyed helping give back to students who, like, I saw myself as someone like, when in like 2018, for example, like I didn't even know what, 2018, like NMAP. I was like, how do I do this? Like, I don't understand. And so I know there's people out there too that need like someone to be able to go to. And so that's, I want to be able to give back to help students like that. And so that's why I love helping with the Red Team Village. And now I'm the co-lead. And so we are just going to continue to help with conferences kind of throughout the year and just trying to help students who are trying to get in the field or already in it and just want to learn more, but having a community where people will feel comfortable, where they can go into and talk to other people.
Oh, very cool. So along the way, did you have any mentors?
So I would say that there's two people that are my mentors. One of them is, both of them are in the same area. I'm in Florida. So one of them works for Hack the Box, and the other one is actually kind of my manager at Optiv now. So they both are very, like anything I bring, like I'll present something to them and ask them like, hey, like, what do you think of this? And I always kind of get their opinion on everything, or do you think this is the right certification? And I would say having them to kind of bounce ideas off of or things I want to do like for the future really helps a lot. I feel like I probably wouldn't be where I am now if I didn't have like people like that to go to. So having a mentor where you can go to is extremely important. And obviously the two people that I do go to, they have experience in the field for years, like probably like 10 plus years. And so they also understand the industry and just understand a lot about it. So having a mentor is really important.
That's good. Yeah, definitely mentors can help you progress quicker and then help you find good learning materials and conferences and things, because I've had people that I've mentored and a good friend of mine that I was able to help out, because when you have to go through, you know, if it's just up to you, you don't know anyone and you're going through Udemy trying to find courses or looking on YouTube, you really don't know what is good stuff when you're getting started out. So it's great to have that help. So as far as you're volunteering there, are you doing any mentoring yourself?
So there is a student at the University of Tampa that I do. I feel like I mentor a lot. I've known him since I think he was probably a freshman or a sophomore, but he was originally pre-med and he like really liked the idea of cybersecurity. And so I kind of like got to sit down with him. This was like 2.5 years ago, and kind of talked to him about like what he could do in cybersecurity and kind of compare the two. And he switched over to cybersecurity, and he has, I think, Network Plus, Security Plus. Like I help him with trying to choose what certifications he should kind of like go into. And then eventually I would want him to take the OSCP. But now his name is Nevin. And so now he's worked like all the way through all that. And now he runs the club that I had started with a friend at the University of Tampa, Brute at UT. So I think he is going into his senior year. So he'll be running the club. And so he was able to get certifications like that and learn in those few years just by kind of like always asking me questions, always asking me like, do you think this is the right like certification to do? Like, what do you think? So I really like that I was able to help him, because I remember being in the same spot as him, being like, what should I do? Like, what certification should I take? Because there's sometimes a disconnect with like universities in general with like the real like industry expectations. Like people will think like, oh, I need to get my CISSP. Like, yes, the CISSP is good, but if you want to go into a more technical role, you don't need the CISSP. if you want to go into a more technical role, try to do like sysadmin skills and then do like Security Plus or Network Plus, and then eventually kind of move up the ladder of like the CPPT from eLearn Security or EJPT. And then OSCP as another certification. But the certifications aren't everything, I would say. If you kind of prove where your learning has, where your learning is at, like, and how much you know, and you show that to a company, then I would say that's just as important as having a certification. It's just harder to get in front of, because sometimes you'll get filtered out if you don't have the certifications. But I promise you, if you harass like a recruiter enough to be like, hey, like, I have what it takes, like, let me please just let me like show you, like, they'll give you the time of day, because most people don't even do that. They just, if they don't get accepted, then they're just like, okay, like, let's try the next one.
Yeah. And also too, it's really cool, the stuff you're doing for the Hack the Box chapter and speaking of Hack the Box groups. Actually, one of my last guests, actually his episode is on today, was David Diaz, that was the founder of the Hack the Box Dallas group. So I had him on. So I'm sure, you know, you're desiring to help people and other, and, you know, get into the industry and so forth. I'm sure that's been pretty helpful doing the Hack the Box thing and rewarding as well, you know, doing your mentoring and hosting those events.
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoy doing those. We try to do it at least every other month. So either every month or every other month. But whenever we started out, it was honestly kind of scary because I hadn't really like ever talked in front of everyone. So doing those over time, being able to walk through boxes with people and just kind of like I was saying before, I remember being in the same spot being like, I don't know what's happening. Can somebody please help me? And they have like that community of like the Hack the Box Tampa Discord to kind of ask people specific questions. And I would say any question is a valuable question. Someone's probably thinking it. If somebody else is asking it, they're just too afraid to ask. But having a place for people to go to, like even just any of the meetups, like even David's, it gives people opportunity to kind of walk through different boxes on Hack the Box or kind of go through different concepts that are important in like pen testing or just in general in offensive security.
So what's your opinion on Hack the Box? Do you think that's a good platform for people to learn on?
Yes, absolutely. That's how I learned a lot, was just doing a bunch of Hack the Box machines and just continuously like pounding my head against the wall, trying to figure stuff out. Really like just doing those, having a safe environment to be able to practice in is also really important. So that's another good thing about Hack the Box, because they have like a dedicated basically environment for people to play in, and it's safe and it's not like you're going to be attacking any unauthorized assets out in the wild. And a lot of like, there's boxes that are based off of real CVEs. There's boxes that may seem like more CTF-y, but when I say CTF-y, like capture the flag, where it's not as realistic, but there's still concepts that you can take from that box that you're doing with different vulnerabilities and still apply it in the real world. It's just a different, you probably have to go about it a different way. But I would say that Hack the Box has been my go-to platform for years.
Do you feel like it helped you much preparing for the OSCP?
Yes. So, I mean, I did the machines like in the OFSEC lab, probably almost 40 machines in there that I worked on. But I also did TJ Knowles' boxes that he had. There's like a list online and I know he updates it. So I'm sure if you like Google search TJ Knoll OSP boxes, you'd be able to find it. So his boxes. And then also there is a friend of mine named John, who's online as John J Hacking. That's what kind of like he goes by online.
Yeah, no, John.
Yeah. And he has a blog. And so John's super nice. And he's a really good like kind of guide to prepare for the OSP and kind of like the buffer overflows. Like guides on that. So that really helped me a lot too, was those three resources, the OFSEC, TJ Knoll, and well, I guess four, and then Hack the Box, and then John's blog that he has.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. John was actually a guest on the show. He's one of the first guests that I had on.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. No, John's super cool.
Tiberius was on as well too. I had Tiberius on.
Oh, cool.
Another one is pretty sharp. So that's pretty cool. So, you know, we've discussed a lot of things that would be helpful, but what would you advise someone that's wanting to get started in pen testing? What would be your advice?
So if it's someone who just wants to jump like right in, I would say focusing on like system administrator skills and building out, say, an Active Directory lab to kind of understand how Active Directory works and like how just because I mean, there's a lot of things to know about Active Directory. So building it out and having your own domain, adding users and seeing how different permissions can cause different things to kind of happen. I would say kind of like that would be like the first step. And then also understanding the networking side of things. So doing the networking, Network Plus, and kind of understanding that from there. And then also you can do Security Plus. And I would say once someone has a comfortable understanding of networking, then they can kind of move into working on stuff from Hack the Box. So there's, they have like beginner boxes on there. There's a bunch of walkthroughs online. And I know like whenever you're doing them initially, like some of the boxes seem extremely hard, but as you do more, they will get easier and you'll understand a lot more. So I would say like those would be the initial steps if someone wants to kind of go into that route of offensive security. And the more that you practice, the faster you're going to learn.
Great advice. That's one of the things too, that my first manager, when I was starting out in pen testing, that he always encouraged us to learn to build. He was never telling us to, you know, cause back then there wasn't Hack the Box, but he wasn't really wanting to tell us to go out and do these hacking courses or pen testing courses. He always taught us to build first. And so I like that advice of yours because Active Directory is a really important one, you know, with all these enterprise environments, just about everyone has Active Directory. So when you're starting out doing network pen testing, that's very important. So that's some really good advice.
Yeah. And there's, if you like Google online, Vartai, V-A-R-T-A-I, security, Active Directory Lab, there should be something from medium.com that will come up. And my friend Ben put together a really good guide about how to basically build out your own Active Directory Lab. And that's how I learned how to build out my first Active Directory Lab was from that guide. And I just play with it from there basically. And I'll practice like different types of attacks before doing them on a like client's environment to kind of see like what's the outcome of it if I were to do this, because you don't want to just throw an exploit into a client's environment because that's not good. So having somewhere where you can test different payloads is also important.
Very good. So what about the social engineering piece? Because that's one of the areas that you don't hear a lot of people telling how to get started there. How would you recommend someone learning social engineering or even the physical pen testing piece?
So for the social engineering piece, for example, for like phishing, I would say getting a good understanding of how like real companies actually set up, like say they're getting a domain, and once they have the domain, they need to set up the MX records, like the mail records, and they need to have an A record pointing to the whatever they're going to use, an Amazon EC2 instance or like DigitalOcean, Droplet, something along those lines. So understanding how that gets built out and how like a real company would be setting up like all these different things for their domain is really important, like using Mailgun as well for like the text records. I did do a presentation because I feel like there's not a lot of resources out there on this. Like you really have to kind of like find how like these things are set up in real life to basically mimic companies. Cause if you don't, then they get basically shut down immediately. Another resource is looking at hosting the domain in Cloudflare, and you can kind of proxy a lot of the information. So someone can't see say what the A record's pointing to, because it'll be pointing to a Cloudflare IP and your IP will be hidden from the world basically. So understanding how to do that with like phishing. So I know I have a video online. I can send it to Philip after the podcast for him to kind of link. And for the physical portion, I would say that that's also, there's some resources out there, but I would say that a lot of them are kind of like outdated. I did do a presentation at Grey Hat, it was last year. And so I kind of tried to walk through some of the things I would do, like batch cloning, and I got a lot of feedback saying people that they've never really seen something like that with a presentation with batch cloning and how to create them. Like, for example, using a hotel key card, Gorilla tape, sticker paper, printing out the ID, and basically using an X-Acto knife to cut out the exact edges and stuff like that. Like not many people kind of like talk about that on presentations and understanding how to clone different types of badge technologies, whether it be like a high frequency or a low frequency. So looking into if someone wanted to look at the physical aspect, understanding different types of technologies like HID or iClass. So just the different types of technologies that are in use for different organizations, for the badges in general, understanding, it's kind of funny to think about this, but so there's a lot of people on the team that I'm on that kind of come from a military background. So they've kind of taught me like the military aspects basically of a physical engagements, because like when you're in the military, you kind of get that taught to you, basically like understanding all the entry points of a building, understanding you need to have an exit route if something goes wrong and not to get caught. So that I would say like those are the biggest things with the different like social engineering and physical. And so for another thing with social engineering with say for the phone portion of it, so phishing or phone pretexting, I would say like learning sales skills is like the biggest thing with doing those types of calls, because the more convincing and more persuasive that you can be on a call like that, the more likely someone's going to believe whatever you're saying and will do whatever you ask, because that's essentially what a salesperson is doing. They're trying to convince you that their product is so good and that you should buy it. And you're trying to convince them that you're saying who you are and they need to perform this action. So I would say having those sales tactics and incorporating them into those types of phone calls is really important.
Very cool. So it's been a really great discussion. And one of the things I love about doing these, you know, the main mission is to share this with other people to help them get started and motivate them. But one of the cool things that's been a benefit of these shows is I learned something each episode, and it was pretty cool. Your wealth of knowledge and know some pretty cool stuff. We're getting down towards the end of the show. Is there anything we didn't discuss that you would like to discuss or share with the audience?
No, I think we went through a lot. I was going to just say that if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Laz Slayer, or on LinkedIn, Savannah Lazera, and then on Discord, Laz Slayer as well. So feel free to always reach out to me with any questions you may have, and I'll be happy to help.
Yeah, and for our audience, we'll be sharing that in the show notes, our social media, and any other goodies that she would like to share. So thanks for joining us, Savannah. It was great having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed being on it as well.
And thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Bugcrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.